Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Esme Shapiro, debut author-illustrator, and Debbie. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 269 of the podcast with Esme Shapiro, author-illustrator of Uko. Uko is a book I've wanted to talk about from the very first read. It's got charm. It's got a voice. It's got Debbie's. It's got lots of phrases that, like after watching a great movie, I found myself repeating to others throughout the week. It's a book I want you to know about with an author-illustrator I couldn't wait to meet. Here's episode number 269 of the podcast with Esme Shapiro. Welcome to the podcast, Esme Shapiro. I'm really excited to talk to you tonight.
I am so excited too.
I got to say, Esme, I every once in a while get a surprise book in the mail. I didn't tell you this off recording because I wanted to tell you it now. I get surprise books in the mail every once in a while that I just, you know, not unrequested, unsolicited is maybe the word you say, but I always like it because it's like, oh, this publisher really knows my taste and knows my interest. And when Uko arrived, your Uko arrived, I fell in love. It was so beautiful. I love this book so much that I would do what you do, which is you jump online and you start asking all your friends, have any of you read this book? And you just form a little cluster of people that love your book. So if it hasn't gotten back to you already, there are many, many of us that really love your book, Esme.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to hear that. You know, it's my first book, so I don't know what to expect at all. And it's really just so exciting to hear that, you know, there's so much positive feedback for it.
I think you can expect that the people that the book connects with will become really strong advocates for you, especially those of us that are online, us librarians and teachers and all of us will really champion your book hard.
Oh, thank you.
Are you taking us on a road trip? Esme, I hear a car. Where are we going? This is the first podcast road trip I've ever been on. I love it.
I'm actually in California, so when you're in California, you basically just live in a car. Most of your life is just spent getting in and out of cars, and anything else, you're just like lying in a palm tree.
Well, how's the view?
Absolutely beautiful. I am looking at 3 palm trees, and I'm actually looking at the Hollywood sign as well.
Oh my goodness. And a puppy barking at you.
Yeah. No, it's quite insane, but now I'm back in my house with my 2 puppies.
Oh. What are your puppies' names?
Chibini and Olympia.
Do either of them look like foxes?
you know, they just look like, and they just look like insane creatures. I don't know, actually, but Chobani was my one of the big inspirations for Uko.
Okay, I'm gonna have you now share with the people listening how are you telling people what Uko is, what this book is. How are you sort of pitching this story to people?
Well, you know, Uko is the story of a fox who really just wants a friend. And he goes into town and he thinks that he's just fascinated by the relationship between dogs and humans. And he's convinced that dogs have basically tamed humans to be their friends. And he just tries really hard to figure out what dogs have that he doesn't.
Yeah, I like that. There are so many moments in this book that are so sort of quirky that I'm glad that maybe I'm marveling at how you managed to summarize this book without saying some of those keywords. I feel like we're playing a game of what's that old game, like Password or something, where you couldn't say certain words. Like, I'm amazed that the word Debbie's didn't come up in your description, because one of my favorite parts, one of the immediacies of loving this book, not only is your art, which has got such, I feel like it's got this really great, it feels like, when I looked at the cover, it felt like I was picking up a story from Lewis Carroll or something like that. I really like that style.
Yeah.
Maybe just because of the quality of the way you illustrated Uko on the cover, this fox just feels a little Cheshire Cat to me or something.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. The bright eyes like that. But to have this fox wanting to make a friend, and so going and finding another seemingly another fox with a hairless two-legged fox that then is called out. What is the page where the mom is like, wait, I'm gonna open this now. I'm gonna read to you from your book.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh good. Okay, that's the reaction. Let me lead in. Uko says, but I do not have a friend to play with. Can I find a friend in this hole? No. On top of this tree? No. Under this moose? Not here either. Aha! There's someone, another fox, playing with a furless, two-legged fox. And Mom calls, Debbie, watch out! Ooh, so that's what they call them, Debbies. I want a Debbie too.
He's trying really hard to understand.
I love it. I love that, and the fact that when I read this book, like, it's almost been 2 months ago now that I first read it, that since then, my friends and I have taken to saying, oh my crickets, all the time. All the time. Carter Higgins. Carter is listening. Oh my crickets.
It's funny, because I'd like to pretend that, like, oh my crickets is, like, an old saying from, like, the Forest Kingdom, you know, like, it's sort of, like, in, like, the same realm as that swell, but, like, for the, like, forest creatures.
And you're just, like, calling it out into existence, into the pages of your book.
Exactly.
Into the realm of your book. That's wonderful. So, okay, you were talking about your dog maybe slightly influencing your inspiration behind this book. Where do you even come at a story naming a fox Uko, which sounds, it feels so much like a forest animal name?
Well, the name actually came to me. While I was making it, I felt like I didn't even have a choice. You know, like, the book and the fox, they were both called Uko.
Okay.
And Chobani, like, the whole idea came because Chobani, my dog, she's a rescue. I actually found her in a right by the garbage, eating a piece of pizza in a snowman sweater. And she has these giant eyes, but this tiny fuzzy body. Like, she's actually a fuzzy case for eyes. And I remember, like, I was hanging out with her one day. I don't know, I was probably eating, like, a ham sandwich and staring at her. And I was just thinking, like, what do you have that all the other animals don't, that I choose to, like, be like, yes, I'm going to live with you. Like, yes, I'm going to feed you, and you can sleep in my bed. Like, it's kind of profound when you really start to think about the animals that we choose to live our lives with.
Right.
You know. And foxes are interesting because they have so many of the qualities of dogs and arguably look like a lot of dogs, but you know, you wouldn't let them in your house unless your glasses are broken, as we learn in Uko.
Yes. Oh my word, I love it so much. The fact that Uko is studying so hard, studying animals. How can I be like this dog? Oh, you like speckled dogs. I can wear spots. Oh, you like pink fluffy things. I can do that. And then to find a home and just go like, I don't even want to give away the ending, but to basically just go, oh, I don't like this. This isn't it. All the games that the woman is trying to play. Oh, I don't like this game. This is no.
Yeah, he or she slowly realizes that that maybe a dog's life isn't the life for him.
I think it's, I don't know. All the qualities that you have working here are so wonderful that it just feels, I don't know, it just feels so grounded. I know that this is a fantasy story. I know there's ridiculous things going on. But the way that you've illustrated it, even down to the woman who calls Uko, "Yoo-hoo, Ruthie, is that you? I can't see. My glasses aren't working." Yes, actually, yeah, I am Ruthie. Just all of that woman with the giant hair, like, mushroom on top of her head. All of it. It just works. It works together in this universe that you've created.
Is that grounding? The giant hair, that's a grounding element?
There are many grounding elements of this story. I think even like her, the old woman's hairy legs are grounding to me.
Me too. What is that?
You know, the feeling of looking at something like this and feeling like, nope, that's not out of place. That all fits. I think that's the quality that I am drawn to in this story. Especially too, though, I should call out that your color palette that you employ on this book is beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
It's just, I don't know. It looks like a, this has come up on another recording. I wonder if it was Carson Ellis I was talking to, someone like that. Someone else who has a really great aesthetic for color, who it feels like you could wear the colors of your book. That it feels like that sort of going together, that there's sort of a, I don't know if it's, the word is like a fashion element to how they go together. It's probably just a graphic element to the way they go together that works really well.
I like that. I think that's I like the idea of wearing the book.
Yeah.
Because I often find when I'm painting that I wish I was painting on fabric that I could wear, you know?
Wait, your book hasn't come out yet. You still have time to like, for the big book release to like paint some fancy pants or skirt or something. You can textile right now, Esme. It's not too late.
I'll run out now.
I've seen Project Runway. You're from New York. I've seen Project Runway. I know how this works.
I know. I really appreciate that because for me, it's like when I'm painting, I'm surprised that any of it turns out looking well because I just go into such a meditative state and like it's all very intuitive for me like the way I pick my colors and so it's always really nice to hear that you know it's working.
Well, that's probably what gives your illustrations such a strong voice is that intuition that you're listening to, that you have found your voice. You found, well, we were talking about before recording that you graduated from RISD recently, but that through that and through all that hard work and those late nights that you found, that you found how to take your work from just creating it for fun into sort of doing it professionally, right?
Yeah, because, you know, I grew up in a very artistic household. Like, everyone in my family is an artist. And, you know, for me, it was like, you know, it was in the realm of, like, eating and drinking and sleeping. Like, painting was just something that I did without realizing it or thinking twice about it. And
what a gift to grow up in a household like that.
Yeah, I feel very lucky. And, you know, I think I knew that it's what I wanted to do. I knew it made me happy, but I didn't really realize, you can't just it's you really can't just be talented at something. You also have to really put in the hours.
Yes.
Otherwise, nothing will come of it. And I really learned that at RISD. Like I learned, like if I want to put together a book, if I want to finish a large scale painting, like I'm going to be up for like 3 nights in a row, or I'm going to just be working all day and all night. And I really love that. I love the element of just falling into my work.
So when you were at RISD, were you studying picture book design? Were you studying like illustration in picture books specifically? Or if not, what drew you to the medium of picture books? Because your art works perfectly in it.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's I studied illustration at RISD, and I've always had a feeling that I wanted to be working in something narrative based.
Okay.
I like I loved my father's a director, so I grew up, I grew up surrounded with a lot of movies and television, and I knew that I didn't want to do that because I was actually more interested in the relationship between words and images.
Okay.
But I like the idea of being able to build these worlds through my words and through my illustrations and picture books. It lends itself so well to that, and I really think working specifically for children is really exciting to me too, because I just feel like you're beginning to create their visual vocabulary with them.
Yes. When you were creating this book, what was your process in that way then? Because of that, I can feel the strong visual storytelling pull in you. Was your approach, at least with Uko, to work in illustration first and find the words later, or did you work on them apart from one another, or was it some sort of blended organic approach?
It was pretty blended and organic, I'd
Okay.
say, because I really started with just painting a fox, and Uko, by the way, like at the beginning, was so different looking than he is today.
The character design has gone through a couple different
He's had many
iterations.
rebirths.
Oh, rebirths. I like that. Rebirths over iteration. That's good.
I feel like I feel like sorry, I'm just totally blanking on your question.
That's okay. I mean, I have to tell you that I marvel at the way that characters find their way into like final art, because I've made friends with a lot of illustrators, and I've seen some of their process of believe it or not, this is what my character first looked like, and then through rebirth after rebirth, somehow this one came out, and I just sort of knew that it was the right design. And so looking at Uko and knowing that this is the design that spoke to you, or where you realize that this is who Uko is, that's a really neat process, because then again, the way you draw people and draw setting and draw the other woodland animals, it fits. It's a style that is cohesive. It's nice.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And it also looks weird, and I like that. I want to call it out and be like, look, this fox looking thing, it's awesome.
I think I read a review the other day saying that Uko looks a little bit like a bean bag.
Oh, I'll take that. I was gonna go with like a foxy Yoda. Like if Yoda dressed up, if Yoda was like, for Halloween, be a fox, I will. And that works for me. Just because Uko's kind of squat and sort of plump and got some big ears.
Looks like he's been eating well. He eats a lot of really good bugs,
Hey, let
probably.
me tell you, especially after he puts on that knit sweater, you can tell like that's a little tight, Uko. Showing up the fox pecs.
Yeah, this sweater doesn't quite fit him. He has to go on a little bit of a diet if he's going to go that direction.
I think that where you, what I like about your design in, well, really the other people, the humans that are in the picture too, but also with the characters, the animal characters, is that it's just sort of slightly abstract. And that quality to me speaks really strongly when you work with children, because the way that we see the world and you know, what looks like a dog to me looks different to other people. You know, I've spent enough time drawing with kids and writing stories mm-hmm. with kids to know that, like, it's nice when a picture book has that quality of, well, this is the way Esme sees a fox and sees this particular fox.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of, you look at a lot of books out there and a lot of the dogs do look the same, or the foxes look the same. And for me, it's like, I want to go into every project without any reference photos.
Yes.
And then I often find that I end up drawing like a beanbag fox, or like a hippo that actually just looks like a sock. Or maybe I'll draw a cat that looks like a pitcher. You know, like, it's just, I often find that when I like let myself just sort of get into the zone, that the characters end up being a little more interesting.
Well, and what I'm hearing about that, which I really think is something beautiful, especially when you're in front of children with your books, is to think, Esme, when you're talking to kids about how to draw characters, to be able to say something like, well, first we're going to start with, we're going to draw a sock, or we are going to draw a beanbag. those are shapes that kids can handle. I can picture that, and now just picture how we can turn that into something else that makes it that all of these reference points that are right in front of children, they don't need to go to a zoo or, you know, to online to find these images of real pictures, because then you end up trying to draw the real thing. But instead, why don't you draw it from that feeling of, well, it feels a little bit like a sock-ish animal. let's put some ears and a nose on that thing. Call it a hippo. It'll be great.
That's a beautiful idea. It's funny, my mom taught sculpture in my elementary school, and one of the projects was she would give everyone like a lump of clay, and you would take the clay and you would put it into any shape you wanted. It didn't have to look like anything. And then you would give it to the person next to you, and then she would say, okay, make an animal out of that.
Wow.
And I feel like that is like very similar to what you're saying, because it's yes. like, it's really great for kids specifically to know that like things don't need to look perfect, you know? It's funny because when I was a kid, I remember I had a lot of, they say like kids are, you know, so full of free when they're drawing and paint, when they're drawing and painting, but I was riddled with anxiety. Like if I was drawing a bird, I wanted that bird to look exactly like a bird.
I have students that way that it's, okay, we're going to draw whatever thing. My first graders make little miniature books. And there are some that, whatever their animal character happens to be, they're like, Mr. Winner, I need a book on bears. Oh, no, honey, just draw a bear. No. Do you have a book? Like, oh, honey. It's okay. There are some people that I think that, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Children are all wired differently. We're all wired differently.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because I actually think that growing up meant sort of relaxing and like letting my drawings be whatever they were going to be.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that you, again, have that story to tell children that as you were growing up, you had to find a way to relax your hand, your brush, however you approach creating this art, to be able to allow this to come out. So you,
right.
The uko is primarily painted, correct?
Yeah, I painted it with gouache and watercolor and colored pencils, and a lot of it is actually paper cutouts as well.
I like that you work in a physical medium. Although I do say it confounds me, the people that work digitally, which is awesome that you can make things look the way you do digitally. The concept of what is original art when you work mm-hmm. digitally is bizarre to me. And you're working with stuff that you can touch. I like that. Because I think when I see when I look at your art, you can see brush strokes there that are real brush strokes. And you could see, when Uko meets Umi, and I'll just say to there, I won't share endings or whatever, but this, the rock that Umi is under, is you can tell that there's a different tool that you're using there, colored pencil in that case, but you could just see that the texture changes, the feel changes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a person that talks about feeling a lot. I guess that's
what. Yeah, I am too. So it's good. It's funny because it's so much of working for me is actually being able to connect to the materials that I'm working with. You know, and I like that feeling of being finished with a painting and my hands are covered in all sorts of colors, and it makes me feel really connected to what I'm doing. And I've tried working in digital, and for me, it just seems like it's hard for me to connect my heart to what I'm doing, because so much of it lies in like the physical aspects of the paints and mixing, and there's like a whole ritual to it that I think is really important into like setting my mind in the space that I'm trying to create.
That's beautiful. Wow. Okay. Whew. You caught me off guard. That was amazing. I was like, wait a second. There's people listening. I need to talk now. Esme, what are you working on now? Or are you like already two books ahead?
Well, I'm actually illustrating a project with the author Keo McClear.
Okay.
Who is incredible, and I really love it. And the story is really just gorgeous. And it was my first time illustrating for an author, having not done the words myself, and which was a totally different process.
Mm-hmm. How was that for you?
Pardon?
How was that for you? Because having just talked about Uko and how the words and the illustrations grew together, to approach something now where you have the story and now you are finding where, you know, I know that good authors always leave room for the illustrators to tell part of the story. So to be able to find that, I feel like is exercising a different part of your brain.
Yeah, it really is. Like at first it was challenging because I was like, I think I was trying to understand what I thought that the author would want. And then after a while I was like, oh wait, like I'm gonna take this and put and insert like my own world into her words.
Yeah.
And like let the two worlds communicate and let them, like, no element is gonna overshadow the other, because I wanted to make the pictures really make the words sing, you know.
Mm.
And kind of let the pictures take off where the words stopped.
It's one of the most beautiful and I think misunderstood things about picture books, especially from just the general consumers, the parents, and just everyone outside of publishing, to know that that collaboration that happens between the author and the illustrator when there are books with two different people on it is. Really looks so different from other collaborations, because you don't talk, do you?
Yeah, you don't communicate. You communicate through the editor.
But you also sort of talk wordlessly in the same way that your mom did between her students in the clay. That here you're handed a manuscript, you're handed a partially formed object, and then you're asked to finish that object without. Sort of, I don't know, without, I think it's something beautiful. I think about it a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I think it feels like magic when I'm doing it.
Especially when it's pulled off. I think time and time again, my faith in publishing and whomever makes those decisions, I guess the editor or the art director or whomever it is at the publishing houses that ends up making those decisions, you could probably tell me who that person or the team of people is that does that, but there, so often it does work and it's seamless and it's beautiful. And you would think that those two people were together side by side making the book, and that's just not the case. So to see it work out is magical. You're right.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm excited to see how I'm still in like the beginning processes of it. Like I'm still in the sketch phase, and I'm just excited to see how it unfolds.
Yeah. What is it? Can you share what the book is called? You might not be able to yet, right?
I don't know if I can yet.
Okay. That's okay. Whatever
I
it
wish
is, it's
I
awesome that you're making something. And how cool is it that they picked you, right? I mean, not only that you have a book out there, Esme, you have a book that kids, that grown adults are holding and loving. I love your book, but more importantly, there's going to be children that love your book, and they're going to look you in the eye when they see you at these school visits and bookstore events and festivals. And Esme, you're going to see that they love your book in their eyes. You're going to see that.
It's so incredible. Like the fact that like this book, that Uko is going to be out there and kind of take on a life of his own, and he's going to be make his way into children's minds and their lives. Like it's humbling, you know?
I'm
It's
sure.
incredible.
Well, I'm glad that from RISD to this story that you're telling to now more books that you're illustrating, I'm glad that it's you, Esme. I'm glad that you are on the other end of these books that you're making. I feel like you have a unique voice, and it's one that is really wonderful. It's so fun to read your book, and just there's a lot of joy when I read with my son and my wife
Oh.
listening in on this story, and my 1-year-old daughter. There's so much joy that flows out of Uko, and so thank you for making it for all of us to enjoy.
Oh, thank you so much. That honestly, it brings me joy to know that it's bringing other people joy.
It is. In a big way, it is. Hey, Esme, I'm gonna wrap up our conversation by giving you a chance to have the final word with in regard to the children that are gonna read your story. So, despite being done with school for the summer, I continue to see children all the time. So I'm gonna see a library full of children tomorrow morning, and I'd love to ask you what message you would like for me to bring to them from you, Esme.
I think I would like to tell them to go outside any chance they can and play. Anytime that it's sunny and warm outside, go outside and play in nature at the park. Make forts out of trees and sticks. I think that is the most important thing to do.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Lucy Ruth Cummins shares her debut picture book about a lion and a group of animals that gets smaller with every page turn. It's called A Hungry Lion or a Dwindling Assortment of Animals. And after that, Evan Turk returns to the podcast to share The Storyteller, his picture book debut as both author and illustrator. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids.
especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.